Trixie's starting to worry.
I'm worried. I'm broken down laughing and I'm worrying the dog.
Trixie is running away from us because we're laughing too hard.
She's coming over to lick my feet and make sure I'm okay. Oh boy.
Welcome to The Everyday Novelist. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer, author of nearly 30 books, more than 30 short stories, and numerous articles and scripts and essays, coming to you from up in the crow's nest with my spyglass on this daily voyage through the dicey waters of business, craft, learning, and art in the writing life. Welcome to The Questions, episode 628.
Today we hear from Jeannie, delving deeper into the subject we addressed a couple of days ago. She asks,
how does a writer leverage unseen markets? What are the pros and cons of creating a fan base that's not a viable demographic? I'd argue that word of mouth is critical, both as a current consumer and a former career bookseller. But how does a writer get that rolling?
Well, that is the question that we all wrestle with all the time. The question of discoverability is the biggest X factor question in marketing, period. The answer, well, there's, I talked about some aspects of this in the last question. There's two ways to answer this. One in my normal voice and one in a kind of silly high-pitched whine. No. Sorry. That was a Monty Python sketch.
You're only allowed to do that if you're wearing a pink chiffon dress, dear.
So there's two ways to answer this.
You better leave that.
Yeah, I'm going to. Oh. Okay, so there's two ways to answer this question. One is the truthful way, and one is the useful way. The truthful way is that the trick to getting any social movement going comes from exploiting social networks. Neil Ferguson's book, The Square and the Tower, details about, what is it, 20 or 40 social networks in history and how the exploitation of those networks caused major changes or alterations in the course of events. However you're doing it, whether you're shooting from the hip or you're doing it quantitatively, when you are cultivating a movement or creating a demand, what you're doing is you are attempting to infect a social network with your idea. It's like infecting a computer network with a virus. If you infect nodes on the fringes, people that aren't well connected to the rest of the network, the likelihood that your infection will spread is fairly low, especially if you're infecting with a low virulence product, which books generally are, unless they're earth-shaking books that people just can't stop talking about. Novels that do that are kind of rare. Mostly people keep their novels to themselves. I don't know why this is. It may be because so few people read in comparison to how many people watch movies and television and whatnot. So when you're looking for something to talk about in a social group where you don't really know the reading habits of other people, you just don't mention books unless they're nonfiction books that tie you in with an interest of the group or that make you look smart or something like that. That's my hypothesis. I don't really have any good data to back that up. But that's my sense of why people don't talk about books the way they talk about movies. So if you've got a low virulence virus, like a book, and you're trying to infect a social network, you've got a better chance of doing it if you can find someone in the network who is really well connected to other people in the network and stupidly enthusiastic about the things that they like. The places where you find people like this, when you don't know them personally, are interest groups. Where people like this tend to congregate, that's where you're going to find the people that are super enthusiastic. Because of, for example, all the people who play Dungeons and Dragons, the really hardcore ones, the ones that evangelize and that get their friends into it, those are the ones you find in the gaming rooms at science fiction conventions. They're the ones you find online swapping character sheets in forums down in strange corners of the internet. If you're looking for hardcore Star Wars fans, you look at a place like I used to run. I used to run this place called Blender Wars, which was a community where people made fan films for Star Wars and other things, but mostly Star Wars. Made Star Wars fan films using free software because we couldn't afford anything else. And so we figured out how to, back when Blender was a really difficult obscure tool with many fewer features than it has now. We used Blender and some other programs that don't even exist anymore to make special effects fan films and short films. That's where my first couple of short films were posted and whatnot. That's where Beavis and Butthead versus Darth Vader was originally posted. And for a while, we had like 10,000 registered users. It was like 100 active users. A lot of people were lurking, but we had, you know, we had a lot of fun. It's pre-monetization. I didn't make any money off it, but I had a lot of fun. But those are the kinds of places you want to find for the kinds of things that you want to do. So if you've got a book that you think will sell to Dungeons & Dragons fans, you want to go to where the Dungeons & Dragons fans are, where the most rabid ones are, where the ones that can't get enough are. And then you risk their wrath, because if you have screwed up or if you have done it poorly, they will proceed to poop all over you. But if you've done it well, you capture their imagination, you've just lit the fuse on a wildfire. When you do that, you're targeting a weak node in the network for infection, and the infection then spreads. And it spreads to all the parts of the network that that person or that group of people are connected to. So figuring out how to map nodes like that is pretty important. It's also super difficult. But that's why marketing people make gobs of money, because they have a knack for mapping networks like this. And if you want to be your own marketing person, sooner or later, whether consciously or subconsciously, you have to develop the ability to spot network nodes like this. The people that Malcolm Gladwell in, it wasn't Outliers, it was the one before that, in The Tipping Point calls mavens. So that's how you find them. Now, when you create a fan base that's not a, quote, viable demographic, well, I mean, what you're doing is you're creating your own demographic category. Every fan base is its own demographic category. The only times you really want to worry is if they're dying. If you have a fan base that is comprised primarily of terminal cancer patients and stage four who are barely literate anymore and can't speak, then you don't want to be targeting those people to increase your fan base. You want to be targeting their caregivers, because their caregivers can speak, and their caregivers help bring them their entertainment. Along less radically ridiculous lines, if your primary audience is people who are in their 60s and 70s, you're going to have problems. You need to start cultivating a younger audience. Now, you don't have to cultivate a younger audience by changing what you do most of the time. What you do is you have to figure out what parts of the younger population are interested in what you're up to. And that's going to be tough, because it's not going to be the same parts of the older population. The people, for example, who I've learned this during my podcasting fiction days, the people who are interested in spy fiction, especially science fiction spy fiction, are not my age. It's the boomers who lived through the Cold War as adults, and it's young millennials and Gen Z, who are far enough away from the Cold War that it's interesting and exotic. Older millennials and the younger Gen X crowd, which is where I fall, I'm in the younger Gen X crowd, they don't care about spy fiction. They're not interested in it. They don't like it. They grew up hearing about the Cold War and how it was such a big deal, and they just are, they're sick of it. They don't want to hear that crap anymore. They're not interested in serious spy fiction. Now, that changed a little bit when the new Bond films came out. When Daniel Craig's Bond films came out, that changed the equation a bit. But let's assume those didn't come out, and I have the CabraCon books coming out in full. I would have to figure out, because the boomers are starting to die. I mean, they'll be around for a while longer. They'll have more voters than my demographic will until I'm 70 years old, which annoys the hell out of me. But they're starting to go. So their ranks are thinning, and they're on fixed incomes, so they don't have as much disposable income. And they're reading less fiction. So as fiction consumers, they're kind of going away. So when the CopperCon books come out, I, or Kitty, or someone else who's working with us at that point, is going to have to figure out, what about those books appealed to the Gen Z crowd that I was pulling in with my podcast, the young millennials and the Gen Z crowd, and then figure out how to find a network of people, or several little networks of people, for whom those same things will appeal, and then market it to them on that basis instead of marketing it to the older crowd on the a lone defector ruins an empire, creates a revolution basis, which is what I was pitching it as when it was first on the podcast, which is what appealed to the boomers. So you adjust the market messaging to fit the people that you're looking to attract. And you want to attract the people who are inclined to be attracted anyway, because they're actually going to enjoy what you're doing, as opposed to the people who aren't inclined to be attractive. People who are marketed into something that they wind up hating just wind up resenting the marketer, because they sold him a bum steer. They gave him an inauthentic, inaccurate sales job, and that's not cool. It's a kind of fraud, really. And you don't want to do that. What you want to do is you want to figure out what about this story is going to appeal to this group and see if you can get messaging suited so that it attracts people from that group to that aspect of that story. And as long as there's enough of that aspect of that story in there, they're generally going to like what they find. So the positives and negatives of creating a demographic like that, well, you know, they die off. And that's always bad. The positives are, number one, the fact that it's small is actually a positive. Small demographics, weirdly, are less prone to moral panics that result in purges of certain people from their ranks. This is not always the case. You find, you know, power games in churches and whatnot. But when you're talking about communities on the fringes, as long as it's not an ideologically united community, if they're united by their interest, they are less likely to jettison your books because one of them decided that something that you wrote 10 years ago qualifies as objectionable material, and so you shouldn't be read, and we shouldn't allow these kinds of people in this place. So you're less likely to be thrown out because they're united by an interest. They're not united by an ideological cause. That's not serious insurance. That's just a trend. It's a positive thing. The second positive thing is a small group who's united around your stories. They're there for one thing, and the smallness means that if you are so inclined, you can have a high-touch relationship with them, like I did with my podcast audience, like I do kind of with you guys, though less so because you guys are doing your own thing, which is what this podcast is designed to promote. But you get to interact a lot more with the fans in a way that they find meaningful. And sometimes you find it meaningful too, which is really cool. And you make friends and you have good conversations, and it's great stuff. And another advantage, it seems like it would be a disadvantage, but another advantage is that it is small. There aren't many people. It doesn't take a lot of devoted fans to make a living. Depending on your price point and what you're selling and how often you put something out, it takes between 1,000 and 10,000 fans who will buy anything you do to make a pretty decent living. Now, it's a pretty decent living in which you may have to be very disciplined about your spending or very clever about investing your profits. But that's what you need to make a pretty decent living. You don't need a huge group. If you happen on a huge group, that's great. But huge groups go through fads. And if you have one of those books that goes out of the park, you gotta expect that the next one won't. You may be one of the lucky ones for whom everything goes out of the park. Most likely you won't. You'll have one or two over the course of your career that go out of the park, and then you'll have the residual hardcore that sticks around for the lesser known works. That residual hardcore is your small demographic that you want to take care of. Now, if you're targeting people based on demographic characteristics rather than interest characteristics, you're probably going to have trouble. Despite what you hear from fashionable identity politics types right and left, or what you hear from conventional wisdom, people who share an age, a race, a sex, a skin color, a political bent, don't all like the same stuff. And if you go after people based on those categories, in fact, if you go after people based on anything that can be easily politicized, you risk A, wasting a lot of effort, B, becoming a football in a culture war, and C, you risk leaving out all kinds of people who don't fit your image of what your fans should be. And that's a tragedy, especially if you're writing stuff that has your soul in it, that's about things you care about, either explicitly or subliminally, that is designed to generate conversations, and you're only targeting people based on their top-level demographics. You're missing out. You're missing out on opportunities for some amazing encounters with fans, for affecting people's lives in ways that you can't imagine because you're having a failure of imagination in who you're targeting. Targeting based on interest, much more reliable and much more viable long-term than targeting based on top-level demographic characteristics. For what it's worth. Thanks very much for the question, and I'll see you tomorrow.
The Everyday Novelist is written by J. Daniel Sawyer and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and Kitty Nakian and is produced by Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. The text is copyright 2019 J. Daniel Sawyer and the production is copyright 2019 Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License and all other rights are reserved to their respective owners.